considering an emergency war spending bill. And they have a responsibility to get this bill to my desk without strings and without delay.
Well, good evening, Truth Seekers. Happy Shock and Awful. Malloy here on Nova M Radio Network. Did you get your fill of green beer and cabbage this weekend, ready to sober up? Bush certainly wasn't, if you watched him at all today. We did that for you, so we'll have some sound for you from his fourth anniversary statements. Instead of speaking with some kind of reverence or sorrow or mourning or even just plain human compassion about the lives that have been lost in his war, you know, the innocent Americans and Iraqis who've died and continue to be maimed and killed in this, so that he can play what he thinks is Churchill or Lincoln or Truman or somebody. Instead of acknowledging that incomprehensible tragedy in Iraq that he has created, he used the camera time today to lecture Congress on their responsibility to continue to fund, without question, his endless killing spree. That's what he says. That's Congress's... They have an obligation to do that sort of thing. They have an obligation. They have a responsibility. A responsibility. And he threw in a healthy dose of good old-fashioned Rovian fear-mongering, just for old time's sake. I half expected to see Tom Ridge pop up behind him with the color wheel and the box of saran wrap and some of that sheeting. Remember that? And what was this on Sunday on Media Horn number one, Tim Russert's program? They had two or three live people and two or three corpses, Richard Pearl and Tom DeLay. It was shy. It was horrifying. And Tom DeLay, who seems to have gotten a haircut since he was run out of Washington, what is up with Tom DeLay? Well, in the first place, what the hell is he doing there? They're really scraping the bottom of the barrel, apparently, at CNN to get guests, or MSNBC or ABC or CBS or wherever the hell he was. Terrible. 4 years later, and it seems the only lesson Bush has learned is that we can never forget the lessons of 9/11, right? You know, he mentioned that in his speech today. We kind of waited to see how long it would take to link Iraq and the attack in New York City and the Pentagon all those years ago. Now, he got to it, eventually got to it. So we'll share some of this unbelievable, out-of-touch nonsense from Bush's mouth, and we'll jump into the Wayback Machine to the fall of 2003. Or is that 2002? Yeah, 2002. And listen to some of the voices speaking for or against the invasion that would occur a few months later. You got to hear this. These are non-administration officials like Lieberman and Gephardt, Russ Feingold, Dennis Kucinich. The Iraqi foreign minister swearing his country destroyed all their weapons of mass destruction after the Bush the first invasion, and so on and so forth. Also, the senator from West Virginia, Byrd. And at some point this evening, probably sooner rather than later, we're going to replay the shock and awe sounds of the first bombing of Baghdad that occurred 4 years ago this evening. If you haven't heard this before, it is disturbing, and it runs about 6 minutes. Now, tomorrow night, we hope to bring you part two of this retrospective with one of Kathy's montage pieces of all the administration rhetoric leading up to the war, from the false weapons claims through today's insanity about making Iraq secure for the future. 4 years of this filthy regime's lies, the Bush regime's lies and deceptions and delusions, all of it on the program tomorrow night. That is, you know, if she gets it finished in time. There's so much. So much. Before we begin, that aspect of the program, Cincinnati-based Chiquita Brands International, last week, it was announced would plead guilty, and they did, I believe, today, to charges of violating federal law by doing business with terrorists. That plea deal is part of an agreement with the Department of Justice. Yeah, Gonzalez's Department of Justice. So we'll also they got caught. That's the only reason they're paying. It required this this company, Chiquita Brands, used to be United Fruit, I believe. They'll have to pay a $25 million fine. Now, I don't know who they pay it to. They pay it to the Colombian people? I doubt it. The company is accused of paying almost $2 million to the right-wing United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, which is a terrorist organization that murders women and children and workers and union organizers in order to make sure that Chiquita Banana could operate in Colombia at dirt wages and then sell their nice bananas up here in our grocery stores and farmers markets and so on and so forth. So a lot of murder, a lot of blood. They paid this this money in at least 100 installments over a 7-year period. The payments went on even after the company was informed that the group had been designated a terrorist organization, as if they didn't know that. According to a company statement, Chiquita voluntarily informed the U.S. government in 2003 that it had been forced to pay extortion to the groups. Oh. The company said, quote, the payments made by the company were always motivated by our good faith concern for the safety of our employees. So, they're going to jail, right? You see, this article that I'm quoting from, it refers to Chiquita, Cincinnati-based Chiquita Brands as though it were a person. There is no mention of any human being in here. It says, according to a company statement, blah, blah, blah. Chiquita said, blah, blah, blah. There is no Chiquita. That's a racist, denigrating term for the brown-skinned woman that used to adorn their packages, you know, with the flowing peasant dress and the bandana on her head, kind of like Aunt Jemima. There's no Chiquita. Chiquita is the woman. Let's see now. What did Bush say? If you deal with terrorists, harbor terrorists, support terrorists, pay terrorists, you are a terrorist, and you will be treated accordingly. So, are there any humans at Chiquita Brands that will now be going to Guantanamo or renditioned to some other country where they could be tortured so we can get the names of these terrorists? The funny part is, of course, you know as well as I do, the U.S. supports, the Bush administration supports this right-wing death squad organization. All Republican administrations since Reagan have supported these death squads in Central America and South America. So, you know, it's a joke. The problem here, the reason they got a $25 million fine is because the Bush administration, through Gonzalez and Cheney, were pissed off that Chiquita Brands got caught. It's okay. The United States government right now, the Bush crime family, is also spending money to support a terrorist organization, MEK, which is allegedly an Iranian terrorist organization that is trying its damnedest to destabilize and overthrow the Iranian government. So, I guess if I support terrorists, bad man. If Bush supports terrorists, good man. Did you notice in the New York Times coverage on Saturday of the hearings in front of the Waxman Committee, there was not a single mention of the guy Nodell, the head of White House Office of Security? His name did not appear. Almost like he was a non-person. But there were three or four references to how Valerie Plame looked. how her hair, her haircut, and the cut of her clothing.
After Secretary of State Powell's presentation to the United Nations Security Council, the world knows that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction.
Twenty-one past the hour. A couple of emails here from people who attended various marches across the country over the weekend on Saturday. This is from Sunshine. Mike, I took my four-year-old daughter to the March 18th anti-war rally in Seattle. My baby girl proudly flaunted her sign. It said, Bush needs a timeout. I was interviewed by a woman from a local radio station. I'm not sure what station she was representing. As she talked to me about my views on the war, she looked at my baby girl and asked how old she was. She asked me if my child understood what was going on around her. I told the lady my child understands how I feel about this war and this administration. She went on to ask if she could ask my daughter what she thought, but of course my daughter would not answer. She's shy. I got the feeling from the woman that she thought it was wrong to have my child there. I don't know for sure, but I got that feeling. As I was walking along, I became angry. I became angry because 3 months ago my husband was asked to volunteer to go to Iraq. My husband said he didn't want to volunteer, but they put his name on the list anyway. Now I ask, would my child understand if her father went off to die in this war? Would it be my duty as a mother to make my child understand if her father died in this war? I ask you this, how many people question the understanding of young children who are indoctrinated against their will into religion? Would this woman, this reporter, stop a woman walking out of her church with her small children if the children and ask if the children understood the complexity of the religion they're being indoctrinated into? I'm not saying the war protest was some type of religious gathering. All I'm saying is, if my child is forced to repair the damage done to this country by this evil regime, then it's only fair that she get a head start. She's a peace activist in training, and I make no apologies for that. Good for you, Sunshine. Mike, Claudia in Kentucky here, back from the march with two observations. One, there were too many causes vying for equal concern before the crowd quickly abandoned the gathering. Bitter weather, winds didn't help. And two, the speakers were advocating the ammunition box step, which alienated a lot of vets against the war and common good citizens who are scared of going this route. I know I myself have been feeling frustrated that our common citizenry aren't yet in the streets over the current administration's behavior, but I'm not yet ready to throw in the towel and say we have exhausted the jury box step. And we're going to lose a huge majority of countrymen who are not willing to sign up for a revolution or a rebellion just yet. Moving the majority faster than they are ready to go only loses them completely. First, more people have to get educated about how serious things have gotten through credible media. I find that's an oxymoron, but ignore it for the sake of argument. And open debate in polite social gatherings. I'm working on a universalist message against war to present in my congregation. Wouldn't it be a turning point when the religious right rediscovers their roots in Christ and finally deplores war as any kind of human solution to national conflicts? Just dreaming my silly goals for the future. Claudia in Kentucky. This is from Renee. I just got back from the rally. What a much different experience from the other relatively peaceful ones. Confrontational, scary at one point. Went with Pete and some of the women from September 5 and Margaret and Gabe. We took the van all the way in. Great parking on the street. But in Starbucks encountered the start of it. Vietnam vet and military group. Gear, his group, Something Eagles, was called in by some right-wing group who told them we were going to deface the monuments, including the Vietnam Monument. I'd estimate 1,000-plus of these guys. They had the area near the street, started the demonstration all mazed off and fencing. You tried to go one way, and they, backed by the Park Service police, blocked blocked you aggressively and told you you can't go that way. Then there was a security checkpoint, like at the airport, near the war memorial. So we decided to go around that. At one point, one of the guys pushed me, and it took all my control not to do it back and get arrested. And the park police pushing me and others getting in my face, and same with Margaret, who was very level-headed, but questioning them. They got right in Gabe's face and were saying some ugly things. Pete called them a blankety-blank fascist. My heart was pounding, and I was so happy to get out of there and in friendly territory. Some yelled, "I'd go to war for her," and others saw my Buck Fush t-shirt and yelled, "Buck you!" And one guy called Margaret an ass and worse, etc., etc. We walked over the bridge to the Pentagon, to the stage. Some of those brainless pro-war guys were on the sidelines holding up signs that said, "Peace sucks." There were fewer people than other marches, maybe 50 to 100,000. The weather deterred folks, cold and windy. Good speakers, though, from all over the world. Midway through, one of the speakers interrupted and said the police, dressed like stormtroopers, had created a barricade, not even near the Pentagon, and had sprayed some of the demonstrators with mace. I didn't see it, but heard they all of a sudden showed up, sirens wailing, and did this, unprovoked. Margaret and I stayed till the end, as the others were too cold and left before all the speeches. We took the train back to Baltimore, stopped by a camp out of demonstrators on the way out. Quite a contrast to the rumored quarters of the pro-Bushies. This one was tense and not as upbeat. Peace, Renee. He wants it up, he wants it his way. But there's a woman on my mind. She may sit there, this man grows still. And she says, "Cool, it's gonna take away his license to kill."
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on.
Before the hour, this is the last email I'm going to read here about the march. And then we're going to bring you Bush today, discussing the fourth anniversary of Operation Iraqi Freedom, or as it was called, Operation Iraqi Liberation, until they realized that stood for oil, or that spelled out oil. Margaret in Louisville writes, "I attended Saturday's march on the Pentagon in D.C. Our four buses from Louisville were a little late getting there because of the driving conditions in West Virginia. We made it well before step-off, so all was well until we got ready to leave. The Department of Defense and local police refused to allow two of our four buses to come into the assigned parking lot. Truth is, they allowed only 15 buses into the assigned permitted lot. 40 buses were sent to Arlington Cemetery, a very long walk in the bitter late afternoon cold. Other buses were sent to the southern parking lot and the mall area, from what I understand, some more than 2 miles away. It was clearly a cruel, calculated way to inflict as much discomfort on the marchers as possible. It wasn't bad enough to not allow the vending of food and water. They deliberately rerouted transportation and did not give any warning, either before or after the fact, that this was going to happen. Since my group was among the first to find out about this, I personally stayed behind to tell as many folks with bullhorns I could find what the situation was. Yeah, I was that fat lady in the red coat going from group to group and asking them to get the word out about the bus situation. The healthy 100 walked to Arlington, giving up their assigned seats to folks who were not as able to make the walk after marching over 2 miles and standing in the bitter cold and wind all day. Many marchers were seniors. There were folks in wheelchairs, wounded vets. What the Department of Defense and the police did was unconscionable. If this was done to discourage marchers, all it did was make the point even more clearly that things need to change. And I found yet another reason to participate. Have I told you just how much I hate these people?" Margaret in Louisville. Yeah, that's always an effective way. And what is crazy, maniacal, are the tools of the oppressor, the tools, you know, the cops, the Department of Defense employees, people who are seen as nothing more than disposable ciphers and their job is to grind down on other disposable ciphers. It's incredible. Bush today, he was not going to say anything. He was going to spend his time with the National Collegiate Football Champions from Florida and hang out and play grab ass and goose butt and maybe drink a few when nobody's looking and get all funky and down with the boys. But somebody came up to him and said, George, you know, you got to say something. So, okay. Well, give me something to say. Hurry up. I want to get out with the boys, drink some beer, play a little grab ass. Little jock snapping here. So they pulled together a little speech for him. And 4 years later, Bush is still using his vaguely defined, non-specified threat as justification for striking a country that couldn't defend itself against a troop of well-armed Boy Scouts, much less the mighty military power of the United States.
4 years ago today, coalition forces launched Operation Iraqi Freedom to remove Saddam Hussein from power. They did so to eliminate the threat his regime posed to the Middle East and to the world.
Threat?
Coalition forces carried out that mission with great courage and skill. Today, the world is rid of Saddam Hussein, and a tyrant has been held to account for his crimes by his own people.
Don't you welcome the day when we Americans can say the same thing? Huh? A threat to the Middle East and to the world? Threat of what? No less leading lights than in the Bush crime family than Colin Powell and Dick Cheney said he was contained. What was his threat to the world? Saddam Hussein? What was he going to do? Show the world his fierceness, his ferocity by building more palaces for himself? Oh, I'm scared. Look, he's building another palace. Oh, Christ, that's a threat to world peace. Oh, my God, watch out. There goes another palace going up. Oh, golly, notify the Israelis. Oh, there goes another palace. Oh, Lord, quick, get the kids off the streets in San Diego. Did you hear he's got a gold toilet? Oh, no. Oh, run. Quick, run and hide. That's a threat.
Threat?
Now, Bush explains mission number 3,245, which is just about the number of dead Americans that have gone into Iraq so that Bush can pretend he's somebody important. Now we're staying in Iraq to make the citizens feel secure? Seems to me that we're making the citizens of that country feel dead. But, of course, that's just my cynicism.
At this point in the war, our most important mission is helping the Iraqis secure their capital. Until Baghdad's citizens feel secure in their own homes and neighborhoods.
Oh, God.
It will be difficult for Iraqis to make further progress toward political reconciliation or economic rebuilding, steps necessary for Iraq to build a democratic society.
So about 20 years then?
So with our help, Iraq's government is carrying out an aggressive plan to secure Baghdad. And we're continuing to train the Iraqi security forces so that they ultimately take full responsibility for the security of their own people.
Let's see. We're continuing. If we go by what this drunk bastard Rumsfeld was telling us 3 years ago, and Richard Perle, the warmongering thug that got us into this, and some of these other people, if we believe them, when Bush says today we're continuing to train the Iraqi security forces, good God in heaven, we must have 40 million Iraqi security forces trained by now. Wow! All right, then. Well, gee, our boys will be home by, I don't know, next Wednesday. Now listen up while Chicken Hawk Chucklenuts describes all the progress that's being made. Yeah, we're making progress. Just those damn left-wing commie media outlets in this country, right? They're preventing us from hearing about it. We're making progress, but this is war, and the war is still in what Bush calls the early stages. Early stages? Okay. Wow. So much for a cakewalk, and in and out of there in 3 weeks, tops 4 years, and we're still in the early stages. How much more liberation and security can Iraq or the United States handle?
Prime Minister Maliki and General Petraeus emphasized that the Baghdad security plan is still in its early stages. And success will take months.
Yeah.
Not days or weeks.
Yeah.
Yet those on the ground are seeing some hopeful signs.
Those on the ground are dead.
I want to stress that this operation is still in the early stages. It's still in the beginning stages.
Oh, yeah.
Fewer than half of the troop reinforcements we are sending have arrived in Baghdad.
Oh.
The new strategy will need more time to take effect.
Oh, okay.
And there will be good days.
Uh-huh.
And there will be bad days ahead as the security plan unfolds.
What's the matter? Did the page end there at the second days? And there will be good days and there will be bad days ahead as... oh, my God. All right, I'm done. Can I go see the ball players now? Oh, I got to say more? Oh, damn. Okay. Now Mr. Bush speaks as if he has any moral leadership left whatsoever. It's amazing how he's lecturing Congress on their responsibilities to fund his little game.
Members of Congress are now considering an emergency war spending bill. They have a responsibility to ensure that this bill provides the funds and the flexibility that our troops need to accomplish their mission. They have a responsibility to pass a clean bill.
Clean bill.
That does not use funding for our troops as leverage to get special interest spending for their districts.
What?
And they have a responsibility to get this bill to my desk without strings and without delay.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's see. Responsibility. What responsibility do you have, you insane killer? What responsibility do you have? Since you are playing war as if there were no tomorrow, and there may not be, do you have a responsibility to any responsibility about the whole brand new massive graduating class of terrorists you've come up with, you have produced? Do you have a list of let me see, what else? How about your responsibility to not lie to Congress, to lead the nation into an illegal war? You have a responsibility there. How about your responsibility to protect our troops? How about your responsibility to make sure there's a clear mission? How about your responsibility to make sure there's an exit strategy? How about your responsibility to make sure we're not slaughtering a nation and plundering their antiquities for Halliburton or Exxon? How about your responsibility not to send wounded troops back into battle? How about your responsibility to take care of people with head injuries? How about your responsibility where it concerns Walter Reed? Huh? You want to go on, chuckle nuts? Oh, that's right. You got to get out and hang out with the ball players. Never mind. Ten before the hour. Last one from the deserter, the coward, who became commander-in-chief of his own special little war. It seems appropriate to end Bush's comments from today with this clip, which is so reminiscent of the good old days of Rovian, Ashcrovian fear-mongering. In every speech, Tom Ridge, color-coded terror alerts in the corner of our television screens every day, 9/11 references in every Bush speech at every opportunity, from bill signing ceremonies to meeting the Boy Scouts. Yes, it's some newspeak of yesteryear surfacing in today's acknowledgement of, hey, we're starting a fifth year. Yeah. Here comes the fear.
It can be tempting to look at the challenges in Iraq, and conclude our best option is to pack up and go home.
Leave all the oil there?
That may be satisfying in the short run. But I believe the consequences for American security would be devastating.
Really?
If American forces were to step back from Baghdad before it is more secure, a contagion of violence could spill out across the entire country.
Contagion of violence.
In time, this violence could engulf the region.
Engulf the region.
The terrorists could emerge from the chaos with a safe haven in Iraq to replace the one they had in Afghanistan.
Here it comes.
Which they used to plan the attacks of September the 11th, 2001.
There it is! There it is! Oh, my God. A contagion of violence. Oh. Katie, bar the door. I love that. A contagion of violence. An onslaught. A tidal wave. Nah, 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 nah. A huge amount. A never ending. Nah, 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 nah. Oh, God. An overwhelming. Massive. No, 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 no. Color. No, no, no. Contagion. Contagion. Oh, my God. Contagion. That kind of is right up there with bird flu. A contagion of violence. Sounds like anthrax and AIDS and HIV and bird flu and typhoid. A contagion of violence. There's no place to run. No place to hide. We've got to kill every single Iraqi. Or at least the ones that don't want us to have the oil. It's our oil. It's my oil. I want it. I couldn't have the Texas Rangers baseball team. I couldn't have our busto. They made me talk in Spanish. I couldn't have anything. Sheikh Khalid Kaladi Gaila Sauda loves my daddy more than me. Sheikhs don't love me. I tried. I'm going to kill him. Contagion of violence. Woo! Hot damn, that's good. Who wrote that one? Contagion of violence. Slips under your door, through your windows at night, into the those little holes in the screens, in your car vents. When you go to the mall to buy a new pair of shoes, it's lurking in the public restrooms. A contagion of violence! Don't breathe too deeply. I've never seen anything like this in my life. Never. But, apparently, we here in the United States of America are willing to wait it out. We're certainly not of a collective mindset to bring this madness to an end. Apparently, we Americans need more dead of our comrades. We need more of our young men and a few more of our young women to be killed in Bush's game. We need more of our soldiers to come home with severe mental trauma that's going to explode eventually. How many young women or children will be shot or hacked to death by a mad, and I mean clinically insane, soldier who loses it because of what he saw in Iraq or what he had to do? How many more? When's the next time somebody's going to blow up a Murrah Federal building the way our last boy did from the first Gulf War? Huh? When is this stuff going to... But Bush has got to have his war. Bush is... And the American people, I guess we've decided to wait it out. Oh, hell, he's only there for two more years. What damage can he do? Well, that's true. Let's all of us who say that, let's give up a son or a husband or a daughter or a mom. Moms. Bush and Rumsfeld and Gates and the rest of these people, they allow moms to be murdered in Iraq now. Not just their moms, but our moms too. How about that? Huh? How about that? Dead moms, dead children, dead babies, dead men, dead women, dead children, dead teenagers, dead moms, dead soldiers, dead, 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 death, 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 death. But it's worth it because we have to make sure the Iraqis are secure? What? Is that what the mission is? To make sure the Iraqis are secure from each other? How do you do that? How do you do that? How do you come to the United States in 1863 and make sure the Americans are secure? How do you do that? How do you do that? Oh, well. When we come back after this break at the top of the hour, we are going to play a couple of things for you. The first thing we're going to do we have the time in the first segment, Kathy? Okay, we are going to try to play it for you in the first segment, and that was the sound, part of the sound. The bombardment went on, it seemed to me, interminably, but we have captured about 6 minutes of the attack on Iraq, the unprovoked, unjustified, maniacal game that George Bush and the people who manipulate him were playing with all these lives. We'll play it for you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. Who's it going to be? Chertoff is going to take Gonzalez's place. Is that right? Okay. 6:30 past the hour. My name is Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. What we are going to do now is, for the next just under 6 minutes, we want you to hear what it was like on that night 4 years ago. So, kick back and listen to the mighty United States of America at work. And, of course, we have a longer version of that. If you'd like to hear it sometime, just drop us a line, and maybe we'll play the longer version of George Bush's Madness 4 years ago tonight. We have a version where the bombing continues. I think our longer version runs about 12 minutes. And up around minute 10, you can hear exclamations of either joy or fun or awe or laughter. And we found out later from sources at CNN that these were the Fox News crew that was on duty in the Baghdad Hilton or whatever the hell the news geeks were standing so they could film and watch this. I don't know. It's you have to wonder how many people died that just that particular night, huh? This is from Travis. Tonight, as I sit here in my apartment in Sacramento listening to your show, I find that my mind is still doing what it's been doing all weekend and today, reeling back to 4 years ago today. 4 years ago today, I was nearing the end of an eight-year ordeal to get a bachelor's degree, and at that time, on this night, 4 years ago, I was holding a meeting with two other classmates. We were preparing to give an oral presentation the next day in our class. The subject matter, Mark Twain's classic, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. I can recall sitting in a pizza chain's restaurant. And as I sat there in that pizzeria going over the key points that I was going to address the following day, I made sure to catch brief glances out of the corner of my eye as CNN broadcast the horror of shock and awe. I'm being too kind to CNN. What they showed that night was a highly edited piece of tripe in night binocular vision green. And every now and then, CNN's well-paid, perfectly coiffed prostitutes, in other words, television news reporters, referred back to Shrub's reasoning for why the United States simply had to invade another sovereign nation whose own leader had been built by us. As you might imagine, I was disgusted, for I knew right there and then that this was a war for oil, that this was to divvy up those pieces of ground where underneath lies the black, carbon, oily remains of living organisms who did not survive the storm of time. And then I thought of the gentleman about whom I was about to give a speech the next morning, Mark Twain. And I thought about his fable, The War Prayer. Perhaps some night this week, Mike, you might be able to read that prayer of Twain's. It's quite small. Heck, you gave George Orwell a whole book. I think, as it was when Twain wrote that prayer, and as it is today, that prayer of his needs to be heard again by Americans and everyone else around the world. This war on terror is like King Arthur's court, pure fiction. Only, unlike the tales involving errant knights of old, for this prince who would be king, Monkey Boy's fiction kills and destroys. Sincerely, Travis. Yeah, the War Prayer. Actually, Travis, we have read the War Prayer on our program. Matter of fact, a couple of times. I guess it's been a while that we have done that, but and maybe we should someday. We'll be back after the break, and we're going to get on board the Wayback Machine and listen to various and sundry people, not members of the Bush crime family, talk about the absolute necessity or the horror of attacking Iraq. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of Americans.
I knew that the farther we got away from September the 11th, the more likely it would be that I would continue to have to convince people that we live in a dangerous world, and we do.
Well, thank God you were there, George, to convince us about that dangerous world that we live in, that you have made infinitely more dangerous, you mad bastard, you. All right, let's work in a couple of calls here before we start the trip on the Wayback Machine. Let's go to Tim. Tim is calling from Los Angeles. Tim, welcome to the program.
Mike.
Hey, Tim.
In the name of God, in the name of Molly, in the name of Kathy, please do not play the longer version of the sound.
Really?
Because my mom went through this once before, and she told me about it in Japan during World War II.
Uh-huh.
And my aunt survived Hiroshima. And the bombing they said was just maddening. She was just, my mom and my aunt were just little girls at the time.
Uh-huh.
And I was listening to it. And I had to pull over and I started crying. Please, please, please don't play it, Mike.
Yeah, well, I can understand, I guess. You were born in this country, but your family wasn't, I take it.
Right, yes. And I'm just crying right now because it's and I'm just thinking about, you know, the people in Iraq who had nothing to do with anything, and they're getting killed like my aunt did, who died of cancer from the atomic bomb, and the pictures I've seen, and what, and the stories my parents, my mom and my aunt, told me,
mm-hmm.
and just putting that sound there, just hearing it, it's just.
Well, I'm sorry, and I truly am. I'm sorry that it affected you that way, Tim.
I mean, I'm a big guy. I'm like a tough guy and whatever, but it's just. I mean, I hope you don't get, and if you do play the long one, I hope you don't mind if I turn off the radio and not listen.
Not at all. I hadn't planned on playing it tonight, but I think it's important to remember what was done in our name 4 years ago so it doesn't happen again, although I don't know why it wouldn't happen again. We are the United States of America, and we have been responsible for an awful lot of unnecessary death in the past 60 years. We're so quick to forget in this country, Tim, what happened 4 weeks ago, 4 days ago, 4 hours ago. We got a commercial that runs on this network that says, do you remember the first question? And the first question was about 30 seconds ago. So we've got to be reminded, as painful as it is, and mainstream media will not do this. I mean, I don't know, maybe MSNBC today, maybe somebody showed that full color bombing assault on Baghdad 4 years ago this night, and where people just I don't know, this madness, this kind of madness can happen when people like Bush hijack the country. There have been several countries, Japan, Spain, Italy, Russia, Germany, the United States, where right-wing madmen have grabbed the reins of power and taken their people into the kind of death and destruction that is just unimaginable. So,
you know, as of right now, I'm looking at the ammo. I'm looking at the ammo, the jury thing, though. I mean, I'm looking at the ammo.
Well, maybe not yet. Maybe not yet. All right, Tim, listen, thanks for checking in.
Thank you, Mike.
I appreciate your call. I really do. Take care. Drive safely, all right?
Thank you.
All
bye-bye.
Right. All right. Dave is calling from Anderson, Indiana. Hey, Dave.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right.
Hey, I just joined. I'm a premium member now.
Well, bless your heart.
And I'm glad to do it, I tell you. I see these people that join like Hannity and all this. You're just looking at a right-winger staring into a microphone. What's good about that?
Nothing to me.
To me either.
Yeah.
I just want to encourage people. I just sent you an email, by the way, and I just hope that people understand. I mean, my plant was just sold, okay?
Your plant?
Yes, where I work.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to do, okay?
Hey, hold on. I got to do a break here. Can you hold on a minute?
Sure.
All right, just stay there. I'll come back to you after the break. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy. Someday it's going to come. Someday. Someday. Someday it's going to come.
Why can't we live in bliss? Peace train sounding loud, light on the peace train. Come on, peace train.
It wasn't all that long ago that we started military operations. We've been there, what, how many days? You're counting the days since we've been there, because I'm not. I'm Jorge, too.
God. It's about 25 before the hour. All right, let's go back to Dave, who's called in from Anderson, Indiana, before we get into the Wayback Machine here. Now, where were we, Dave?
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Now, I'm just telling you, I think everybody should try to join and support what they believe in.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I'm getting ready to lose my job, okay, literally.
Where do you work?
Where?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure I want to give the name of the company, but
okay.
It's
What industry? Can
one
you
of
say?
Two auto parts manufacturers by GM.
Okay? Auto parts, okay, I got you.
In Anderson, Indiana.
Moving to China, probably.
Actually, yes. Yeah, some of the machines have moved to China and some other foreign country. I don't know.
Yeah.
We were offered CAFTA, NAFTA, TAA, FTA, all that stuff. You know.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just really think that people ought to. I mean, I spent some of my last hundreds of dollars joining because you know what? You listen to the AM radio dial today. There's nothing there, Mike.
Well, except propaganda.
Right.
Tremendous amount of propaganda.
Right-wing propaganda.
That's all it is.
I don't know, Mike. I just don't know what the average American's going to do.
I don't either. I don't either, Dave. I keep waiting to see if a charismatic, honest political leader will emerge who will help us figure out how to get out of this. And what I see are inexperienced first-term senators and ambitious senators and retreads and has-beens and used-to-bes and wannabes. And frankly, at this point, most of them just turn my stomach. We need leadership, and we have a bunch of political thugs who couldn't care less, don't know what to do. They make sure that they go in front of groups like AIPAC to swear their allegiance,
right.
And then they go to groups like the VFW and swear that they'll never let the troops down. Then they go to the American Legion and swear that. I'm sick of it. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
I don't know. But you know what? The market that most people are pointing for is the American market, because our dollar is worth so much more.
Well, not for much longer, pal.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What are they going to do then?
Well, when the Chinese start calling all those notes in, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, stay in touch, all right? So that we know where to meet up.
Everybody should join. Support it.
Well, thanks. That's good of you to say, Dave. Thanks a lot for checking in, pal.
All right, thanks.
All right, stay in touch. Take care. All right. Is this from 03? All of these are from 2003, Kathy? 2002, that's right. We invaded and started murdering people in Iraq for no reason in 2003, this time 2003.
Yeah, what I did today when I was doing this exhaustive search for weapons of mass, actually looking for sound clips that were relevant to pull together a montage of administration deceptions surrounding the war in Iraq over the last 4 years, so that's going to be massive. But I found all these clips running up to the war of various voices.
Did you cut yourself off there?
Speaking, sorry, I don't know what happened to my microphone there, speaking for and against the war in the lead-up to the war in the fall of 2002, and I thought, well, tomorrow night we'll play administration speeches, and tonight we'll play, go in the Wayback Machine and play some of what legislators were saying and other dignitaries.
Okay, what we have here, we have everybody from Saddam's foreign minister speaking at the UN, matter of fact, that's where we're going to start, to Dennis Kucinich, Al Gore, Tom Daschle, let me see who else is here, Robert Byrd, Senator Byrd, Senator Kennedy, who else we got? There's Tom Daschle again, Joe Lieberman, Kucinich again, Daschle again, Russ Feingold, and I guess those are the names, Kucinich again. All right, this is from September 19th. 2002. This is when Najir Sabri, Iraq's foreign minister, was speaking at the UN, and he's quoting from a letter written by Saddam Hussein about Bush's speech to the UN the previous week, where Bush was really making the case that Iraq was this rogue, out-of-control state with nukes and bombs and murder and death and just chomping at the bit to attack Iran and Syria and Israel and Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Turkey. They were poised. Oh, and when they finished with all those people, they were going to send the bombs and the guided missiles to Baltimore and New York and Boston and L.A.
Then you're painting a picture that would...
The U.S. President talked about the importance of applying democracy by the government of Iraq. He pretended to care for the people of Iraq. After he and other presidents before him have killed by the use of weapons, including depleted uranium, and by the blockade, which is now more than 12 years old, more than 1,700,000 innocent Iraqis out of a population of 25 million citizens. So after a long time of utilizing the American propaganda machine, along with official statements of lies, distortion, and falsehood, the focus was deliberately turned on inciting the American public against Iraq.
Really? Well, what's your proof of that, Mr. Foreign Minister?
Ladies and gentlemen, I hereby declare before you that Iraq is totally clear of all nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons. If there are anyone amongst you who might still worry that the fabrications announced by American officials about Iraq may possibly be true, our country is ready to receive any scientific experts accompanied by politicians. If such experts and politicians visit Iraq, we shall provide them with all the facilities they need to achieve their objective, that is, to see the true facts as they are.
Oh, no, Mr. Sabri. There are no politicians or experts from the United States who wanted to come and see the truth. They were all terrified. The Democratic leadership was terrified of crossing Mr. Bush, and the Republicans were just gnashing their teeth looking for another lovely war as long as their sons and daughters didn't have to go, as long as it was the sons and daughters of Democrats and Republicans out here in flyover America, but as long as they were in the Republican Party and in a governing position, oh, we love a war as long as we don't have to fight it. Dennis Kucinich was on Wolf Blitzer's program. Blitzer asked this question. Congressman Kucinich, what about the argument that it's better to deal with Saddam Hussein before he develops nuclear weapons than afterwards?
Well, I've read the resolution, and it connects Saddam Hussein with 9/11. Iraq's not connected to 9/11. Iraq's not connected to Al-Qaeda. Iraq's not doesn't have any usable weapons of mass destruction, the ability to deliver them, or the intent to do so. So this resolution tries to cobble together a bunch of fictions to create a pretext for war against Iraq. I don't think the American people want to send their sons and daughters to that region just to be able to protect oil. I think the American people want peace, and they want disarmament of Iraq. We can still do it. War is not inevitable. We can avoid war if the administration wants to avoid war. We want inspections. We want disarmament. We don't want war. If we give the president a blank check for war in that region, the check is going to bounce.
Yeah, well, guess what, Congressman? Guess what? That was from September 19th, 2002. This is from September 23rd, 2002. Al Gore speaking at San Francisco's Commonwealth Club.
The administration's disdain for the views of others is well documented and need not be reviewed here. It is more important to note the consequences of an emerging national strategy that not only celebrates American strength, but actually appears to glorify the notion of dominance. If what America represents to the world is leadership in a commonwealth of equals, then our friends are legion. If what we represent to the world is empire, then it is our enemies who will be legion.
Bingo! Al Gore again on the dangers of a preemptive doctrine. Other nations could point to this precedent as justification for invading anyone they wanted to.
President Bush now asserts that we will take preemptive action even if the threat we perceive is not imminent. Now, if other nations assert that same right, then the rule of law would quickly be replaced by the reign of fear. Any nation that perceives circumstances that could eventually lead to an imminent threat would be justified under this approach in taking military action against another nation.
Right. Well, so far, so good. Mr. President Gore? So far, so good. Nobody has picked up on the Bush doctrine of, I don't like the way you look. I don't like the way you smell. I hate your old lady. I don't like your food, so I think I'm going to attack your country. I want your oil. I want your opium. I want your coca leaves. I want your farm products. I want your oil. Did I mention oil? Okay. Well, I'm going to invade you. More of this when we come back. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M. It's about 9 before the hour. All right, back to comments made by people in the run-up to Bush's little adventure. This is from September 25th, 2002. Tom Daschle on the Senate floor on his past belief that Bush was not politicizing the war.
Right from the beginning, I felt, well, first it was pollsters, and then it was White House staff, and then it was the vice president. And all along I was asked, are you concerned about whether or not this war is politicized? And then the follow-up question is the White House politicizing the war? And I said, without question, I can't bring myself to believe that it is. I can't believe any president or any administration would politicize the war.
Well, probably any true president wouldn't. But we have Bush. Senator Robert Byrd on a preemptive strike against Iraq.
For the first time in the history of the Republic, the nation is considering a preemptive strike against a sovereign state. And I will not be silent. America fights wars, but America does not begin wars.
Oh, well, guess what? Senator Kennedy, his position to regarding Bush's war on Iraq.
There is clearly a threat from Iraq, and there is clearly a danger. But the administration has not made a convincing case that we face such an imminent threat to our national security that a unilateral, preemptive American strike and an immediate war are necessary.
Okay, the applause came from the John Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies audience. Kennedy continuing on the retaliatory terrorist attacks we face if we bomb Iraq.
A largely unilateral American war that is widely perceived in the Muslim world as untimely or unjust could worsen, not lessen, the threat of terrorism. War with Iraq before a genuine attempt at inspection and disarmament, or without genuine international support, could swell the ranks of al-Qaeda that sympathizes and trigger an escalation in terrorist acts. As General Clark told the Senate Armed Services Committee, it would supercharge recruiting for al-Qaeda.
Well, guess what's happening, Senator, huh? Here he is again, what Saddam may do if we attack. Well, we better expect heavy casualties.
I have heard no persuasive evidence Saddam and his military may well abandon the desert, retreat to Baghdad, and engage in urban guerrilla warfare. And in our September 23rd hearing, General Clark told the committee that we would need a large military force and plan for urban warfare. General Hoare said that our military would have to be prepared to fight block by block in Baghdad, and that we could lose a battalion of soldiers a day in casualties. Urban fighting would, he said, look like the last brutal 15 minutes of the movie Saving Private Ryan.
Well, I'll tell you what, Senator Kennedy, we're not losing a battalion a day in casualties, but our military is having to fight block by block, not just in Baghdad, but eventually all over the place.
Well, we're not losing a battalion a day in dead soldiers, but God knows how many are being maimed.
That's very true. Tom Daschle putting on his pink tutu again to rubber stamp Bush's war resolution.
And it is still my hope and my expectation, really, that at the end of the day, we're going to have a broad level of support on both sides of the aisle for a resolution that indicates our support for the United Nations effort and our support for the administration's effort in dealing with Iraq.
Wow. Wow, that's really good, Senator Daschle. What were you at the time? The Senate Minority Leader? Is that what you were? And okay. We got time for one more before the break? Okay. This is Joe Lieberman.
Oh.
With Bush at a Rose Garden address with House and Senate leaders. Here he is, Benedict Lieberman.
I'm truly hopeful that the broad bipartisan support that I see here today behind you, Mr. President, as our Commander-in-Chief, will strengthen the work of your Secretary of State and your administration at the United Nations.
Oh.
I am convinced, as impressive as this group is here today, though there will be a serious debate ahead in both houses of Congress, and amendments will certainly be offered in the Senate, as is the right and responsibility of those who disagree with this amendment, that in the end, those who disagree with this resolution, in the end, this resolution will pass in the Senate with a very large bipartisan majority.
Now, if you don't mind, Mr. President, I have to go to the toilet. I'm Senator Lieberman, and I'm always constipated. I'm sorry, but we'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network.
Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. Simon in the UK reminds me that Tom Daschle was majority leader in September and October of 2002. I said minority. Simon writes, that's what's so galling. If these useless Democrats had stood with the 23 who said no, this war might not have started. I say maybe, because Bush probably would have launched an attack even if he had lost the vote. Little dictatorial jackass that he is. Dennis Kucinich, speaking in the House on Thursday, October 3rd, 2002, on the weapons we provided Saddam Hussein.
Throughout 1989 and 1990, U.S. companies, with the permission of the first Bush government, sent to Iraq, the government of Saddam Hussein, tons of mustard gas precursors, live cultures for bacteriological research, helped to build a chemical weapons factory, supplied West Nile virus, supplied fuel explosive technology, computers for weapon technology, hydrogen cyanide precursors, computers for weapon research and development, and vacuum pumps and bellows for nuclear weapons plants. We have met the enemy, said Walt Kelly's Pogo. And he is us.
Well, actually, he's George Herbert Herbert Bush and Ronald Reagan and Donald Rumsfeld back in the day and Dick Cheney back in the day. There was money to be made, Dennis. My goodness. Daschle, putting on the pink tutu again, Daschle admits it's a foregone conclusion that we'll attack Iraq. Since Saddam won't comply, he's interviewed by media whore number one, Tim Russert.
Then you're painting a picture that would most likely result in war.
Well, I would hope that we could use force, if necessary, in ways that could contain the breadth and the scope of war, but certainly if force is necessary, and if we anticipate his reluctance to comply, I don't know that we have any other choice.
Well, you can always say, as you did, that as most of the Democrats did, that you didn't know. You thought the intelligence was what Cheney said it was. Of course, most senators have ways of finding out when they want to find out what is the truth. Oh well. And anyone who thinks, as Senator Daschle said here, I would hope that we could use force if necessary in ways that could contain the breadth and scope of war, that person is either totally ignorant about military tactics, has never served in the military, has never read military history, doesn't have a clue about the rules of war, the first one of which is all the rules disappear once the war begins. Russ Feingold, in the Senate debate on the Iraqi resolution, October 9th, 2002, now he joins the list of Democrats opposed to war. Remember, also, he voted no on the USA Patriot Act.
As mighty as we are, I wonder if we aren't very close to being overextended. An invasion of Iraq in the next few weeks or months could, in fact, be very counterproductive. In fact, it could risk our national security.
That doesn't matter to Cheney and Bush and the rest of these neocon bastards. Senator Feingold, why would they care? There's money to be made. Feingold again on the unanswered questions regarding the Iraq invasion.
Mr. President, in any event, I oppose this resolution because of the continuing unanswered questions, including the very important questions about what the mission is here, what the nature of the operation will be, what will happen concerning weapons of mass destruction in Iraq as the attack proceeds and afterward, and what the plan is after the attack is over.
Oh, well, you're just getting awful curious there, aren't you, little Wisconsin senator? You better sit down. You might get a little mailing of anthrax. Feingold, on why he votes no. When he says Mr. President, he's referring to the President of the Senate during this debate.
In effect, Mr. President, we're being asked to vote on something that is unclear.
Uh-huh.
We don't have answers to these questions.
Uh-huh.
We're being asked to vote on something that is almost unknowable in terms of the information we've been given.
Well, Senator Feingold, at least you had the conscience to vote no. A lot of your colleagues just went along with the program. Dennis Kucinich, a news conference following the Senate vote on Iraq war resolution. Kucinich makes the point about the economy and the need for peace. Oh, Dennis, that is so quaint.
All across this land, Americans are looking towards the United States to be a nation among nations, working through the United Nations to help resolve this crisis. All across this land, people are looking for America to deal with its economic problems and to focus on those and not to get distracted by a war with Iraq. I think that this vote today is a strong testimony. As we stand before you, a total of 133 members have voted against this proposition of preemptive war. I am so proud to stand here with members of our Democratic caucus who did not make this a partisan matter, but who, by their presence, helped to demonstrate that America is being heard from today. And there is an advancing tide for peace in this country.
Well, not really, Congressman. Not really. But nice try. Senator Byrd on the Homeland Security Act, how it's being slammed through the Senate and why he's filibustering it. This was November 14th, 2002.
I've had 48 hours, sleeping time included, in which to study this monstrosity. 484 pages. If there ever were a monstrosity, this is it. And I hold it in my hand. A monstrosity. I don't know what's in it. I know a few things that are in it, and there are a few things that I know are in it that I don't think the American people would approve of if they knew what is in there. That we're not going to debate in the normal course of things. We're going to have 30 hours of debate. That's it. 30 hours. That's all. 30 hours. 100 senators. 30 hours of debate. And this is one of the most far-reaching pieces of legislation that I've seen in my 50 years.
And we dropped that piece in because we just want to make sure you remember that this Homeland Security Act, the USA Patriot Act, the war in Iraq, all of it were parts of a whole to take this country to fascism. Dick Gephardt, Wednesday, February 19th, 2003. This is where presidential candidate, you'll remember, Gephardt stands on attacking Iraq. He's for the attack, but he's against Bush's unilateral approach.
I stand with this administration's efforts to disarm Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm proud that I wrote the resolution that helped lead the president to make his case at the United Nations. For all our military might, there are too many threats to our security, too many global challenges for America to simply go it alone. We need the friendship and cooperation of our time-honored allies. We must lead the world instead of merely bullying it. If we can do more to share democratic values across the world, then we won't have to rely on arms alone. We can wage peace and not just war.
Oh, my God, he sounds like Hillary Clinton. Ugh. All right, Kathy, I think that's all I can handle tonight. You know, to go back and listen to what some of these people said, I'm astonished all over again. I'm dumbfounded all over again about the depth of the ignorance and the complicity and the willingness to go along. When those of us out here in the street, we knew what the truth was. I'm no damn congressman, neither are you. You're not a member of the Senate, neither am I. But we knew what the truth was. And other than Kucinich and Feingold, oh, never mind. Straight ahead, knock 'em dead. Pack your kit, choose your hypocrite. You don't have to go to Off-Broadway to see something plain absurd.
You know, it'll take time to restore chaos and order, but we will.
Are you always in confusion, surrounded by illusion, sort it out. You make out. 21 past the hour. Let's go back to some phone calls here, starting with John, who's calling from Oakland, California. Hey, John. Hey, John.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, thanks. This is a real honor. I want to say that, first of all, you are the heart talk radio, that you pump blood to our brains, except for the few who are already brain dead.
Okay. Well, all right. Okay, but what you really called about.
Yeah. I want to report some news here from the Bay Area, and I have a haiku after that, if I can.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. The news is that there's a town here, Lafayette, which is just outside of Oakland.
Yeah.
And they're making a lot of stir over here with the 3,200 white crosses in her front yard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm familiar with that story.
Oh, you've heard of that?
Yes.
Yes, they're causing a ruckus, which is good.
Right.
And the other good news is we have people outside of Nancy Pelosi's home here concerning this recent thing about funding for the war,
mm-hmm.
especially for an attack on Iran.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Nancy Pelosi is great. I like her, but she's really wrong on this thing.
Right.
So, that's the news. As far as the haiku...
I'm not sure what... help me out here. What has Pelosi said about the upcoming war with Iran?
Well, I believe there's a thing in Congress right now. They're trying to pass something giving funding to Bush.
Yeah.
For an attack on Iran. Carte blanche.
I wouldn't be surprised, but I think what it is a resolution to that he doesn't have to come to the House in order to get permission to attack another country. And is that what you mean? I think
right.
That's what's going on.
Right. That's what they're demonstrating against.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
But like I said, Nancy Pelosi is great. I think she's going to be a good speaker, but she's really wrong on this one.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's hear the haiku.
Okay. It's called... Fallen soldier haiku. Bloodied flags cover anonymous coffins. Silence is murder.
All right, I like it.
Great.
I mean, if that's the right word to use for something that...
Yeah. Now, if I could expand on the last line.
Sure.
Silence is murder. We cannot be quiet when our troops are dying senselessly in Iraq.
Yeah.
It's just senseless.
It is indeed.
And I was brought up Catholic, and Catholics have what is called a sin of omission.
A what?
A sin of omission.
Sin of omission. Yeah, I didn't hear it. Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah. And it's a sin of omission to not be quiet about this thing.
I think you're right.
I mean, these guys are they're calling it a war over there, but it's really an occupation, and they're really just using our soldiers there as glorified security guards. For the oil fields. I mean, I hate to say that, but that's what they are.
Or to secure the oil fields to make sure that the Maliki government reaches the first benchmark, which is to make sure legislation gets through this fake Iraqi parliament that allows foreign oil companies. Gee, I wonder who that would be to come in and get the oil out of the ground for as much as 30, 35, 40% profit. So I don't think there's any question what this war is about. Anti-war protesters were talking about it before Bush unleashed shock and awe. We're not stupid. We may be suffer from inertia. We may be unable to get our act together and put 10 million people in the streets, but we're not stupid. So,
but we've been bribed for 4 years. And can I say one thing about Richard Pearl?
Yes.
Well, I saw him on Meet the Press, and somebody should have told him that he had blood dripping out the side of his mouth.
Oh, it was awful. To put Pearl and Tom DeLay on the same program is just to invite the heavens to open and every single god in the whole creation of the human mind to start hurling thunderbolts. I mean, those two are demons. They're flesh eaters. They're baby destroyers. They're monsters. They're absolute monsters.
Yeah, well, Pearl is a ghoul.
No question. John, thanks for checking in. I appreciate your call, and thanks for the haiku. I just watched a bit of that. We went to the North Georgia Mountains on Sunday. We got the hell out of here. But when I was, I don't know, who dressed Molly, Cindy? Did you or did I? I don't know. One of us did. But I had the television on in the bedroom, and before we went up to, we went to a winery. Yeah, in North Georgia Mountains, they're sort of like Northern California. Well, not really, but there must be 10, 12 wineries in North Georgia now. So we went up to one, Three Sisters Winery. And we also went to Helen, Georgia, and just kind of took the day and drove around the beautiful, beautiful North Georgia Mountains because it is spring almost. Before we left, I turned on television, and there was Tom DeLay. Why? Why?
It was all so black and white. But the years have taught me better. Good and evil do not matter. Their words are masters scattered to hide their bloody hands. And what's truth and what's illusion? What's order or confusion? Who's winning or who's losing?
Jesus, don't want me for something. Something's
I know there's a lot of speculation that these reports in Washington mean there's going to be some kind of graceful exit out of Iraq. We're going to stay in Iraq to get the job done.
Before the hour, Kathleen writes in, Mike, I watched the rerun of Meet the Press yesterday with Pearl and DeLay. She means the late night edition. And, you know, I told my husband I felt physically nauseous just seeing them sit there with their coffee cups. And the feigned, muted tones of Russert, who asked, were the calamitous, disastrous brain decisions that started this fiasco, the war in Iraq, quote, misjudgments, end quote. I ran to the bathroom. It really does make you physically ill, Kathleen. That's why I refer to him dreamily as media whore number one. Tim Russert couldn't care less about the causes of war or the complicity of the people that was sitting right in front of him Sunday in starting the war and causing this mega death. Tim Russert doesn't give a damn. He couldn't care less. He is a high-priced media prostitute. That's all he is. That's all he'll ever be. That's all he's been. That's all he wants to be. He doesn't care. Back to your phone calls. Let me see. Who's next here? It would be Clark, who's calling from Texas. Clark, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm fine. Caught me filling up with gas. I had a couple of thoughts. First is that, you know, the old saying that you tell a lie often enough, everybody thinks it's the truth. One is they hate us for our freedom.
Right.
The other one is everybody thought they had weapons of mass destruction.
Yep.
That's the one that really drives me insane.
Yep.
Not everybody thought that. There was a lot of people who thought that, but I listened. I at the time when all this was going down in 2003, I was scouring any place I could find. I was pretty much limited to broadcast news. I had a satellite dish, but I was I couldn't get some of my channels because I was traveling, and it was the only local channels you could only get. Anyway, regardless to say, I was having trouble finding some place that was telling the truth. I found two places. One was C-SPAN. The other was Free Speech TV. I don't know if you're familiar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
With Free, okay, and Amy Goodman.
Right.
Democracy Now. And I knew, year, 2 years, 3 years later, they're coming out with information that I knew before the war started.
Right. I feel the same way. How come you and I knew about it and millions
of... Yeah, exactly. It's like, how could I know this and Nancy Pelosi doesn't know this? How could I know this and Biden doesn't know this? You know, it just, I'm like, what is going on in this world? The other thing I want to tell you, I'd listened to, a lot of times...
Well, wait. Before you move on, the answer to that could be that they did know.
Well,
as well as you knew and I knew and hundreds of thousands of other, millions of other Americans knew and people around the globe knew that Bush is a liar, that Bush is a warmonger and a death lover, and all the people around him are the same way. And Pelosi knew, and Daschle knew, and Gephardt knew, and everybody knew. If Dennis Kucinich knew, and you knew, and I knew, then they knew. So that raises the interesting question then.
Well, if they knew that some people had a different opinion, the question is whether they were buying it or not, or whether they were really taking, it was even on NPR and PBS, which have, has been the bastions of kind of more normalized news, McNeil Lehrer. Of course, I knew McNeil Lehrer had gone bad right after Reagan dumped the fairness doctrine, and I started seeing Exxon commercials and Monsanto commercials and ADM commercials on PBS. And I was like, well, that's the end of PBS. And I kind of went away. I joined the circus. I went away on the Renaissance circuit and started performing on the Renaissance. I didn't pay any attention to news anymore. And that was during Nick Clinton, when I guess I didn't really have to so much. Of course, now, I'm not a fan of Clinton or what he did either. I mean, basically what's happening now is governments are being taken over by the WTOs and the IMF, and we're going to essentially a multinational fascist world, not just America, but the entire world. Some places are fighting it more than we are. We just don't know. I mean, I don't think Americans would go along with this if they knew what was going on, but they have no access, or they have access, but they don't know where the access is to real information. Mm. Thank goodness for the Internet, or nobody would know anything.
That's true.
I did want to, I listened to some great music during your breaks, and I want to tip you off to, have you ever heard of Terry Reed?
Terry Reed?
Yeah, R-I-E-D, I think it is.
I don't think so.
Well, look him up, and there's a song called Dreams. It's off of an album called River, and I think you'd really like it.
All right.
It has nothing to do with politics. It's just a beautiful song.
All right. Well, thanks for the tip, Clark.
You're welcome.
All right, sir. Take care.
Happy trails.
Thank you. You too. Take care. Happy trails to you. Steve is calling from Alexandria, Virginia. Steve, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
I'm
just want to ask you about this weekend, what you thought of the rally.
Say again?
I just wanted to ask you what you thought happened this weekend on the rally.
What do you mean?
In D.C.?
Well, all I know is what I read in the papers. Maybe 80, 90, 100,000 people marched on the Pentagon to protest the war.
What was the numbers again?
Anywhere between 70 and 100,000, I believe. No, nobody counts anymore. The Park Service in D.C. doesn't. The police don't. The U.S. military doesn't. The parade organizers or the demonstration organizers, they'll come up, they'll try to come up with a number. What did you think of them, Steve? Well, is he gone? Did I have a monkey on there? Was he a monkey? Oh God, I don't know either. Oh well, okay. Jake is calling from Arcata, California. Hey, Jake, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Going fine.
Yeah, I also saw that Meet the Press on Sunday morning, and, you know, Tim Russert is a White House tool. And by the way, I got to tell you, since, you know, Sunday morning was the morning after St. Patrick's Day, Tim Russert definitely did show the effects. You know, I think he has a bit of a drinking problem, putting Tom DeLay and Richard Pearl on there. You know, right. I mean, two of the most evil people on planet Earth. Tom DeLay, who was advocating World War III, and Richard Pearl, who's been advocating World War III for the past 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are sick in the head. And I don't understand what Tom DeLay is doing on Meet the Press. I thought Tom DeLay was supposed to be in prison, Mike.
Well, apparently, Reggie sent me a link to an article on Time Magazine. Apparently, sit down, Jake, sit down. Are you sitting?
I'm sitting.
Okay. Apparently, Tom DeLay is going to run for Congress again. Oh, I told you to sit down. I told you.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom DeLay is going to, because he understands the basic rule in American politics. People cannot remember beyond about, oh, I don't know, 3-4 weeks?
Yeah, and Tom DeLay, he is such a whore for corporate America, he will get more money than God. So you never know what can happen. You know?
Oh, and absolutely. If it's only a matter of money, DeLay's back. DeLay's in. He's in.
Well, hopefully the people of Texas won't be, that dumb this next time around. Hopefully.
Well, let's hope not. All right. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Jake. Yeah. I appreciate your call. Yeah. Remember, to me, Tom DeLay's crowning achievement, and he did this with, who is the big lobbyist in D.C., Kathy, that just got convicted, the lobbyist, Jack Abramoff. Abramoff represented a whole bunch of corporations that do business in the North Mariana Islands. And there was an attempt by some Democrats in Congress to pass legislation that protected... See, the North Mariana Islands are an American part of our empire. It's an American protectorate. Their laws are based on American law. They have the same legal protections as the people of that area, as American citizens, pretty much the same. So there was an attempt to make sure that a law was passed in the United States Congress that addressed the issue of slavery as it was being perpetuated in the North Mariana Islands. The Chinese factory owners who run the factories that produce American designer clothing, those Chinese factory owners were bringing in to the North Mariana Islands women and children to work in their factories. Now, of course, that's not permitted in this country, working children, but so all the laws in the United States were not applied in the North Mariana Islands. Some members of Congress, Democrats, tried to get legislation passed that would prohibit sexual abuse of these women and children. And Tom DeLay stopped the passage of that legislation. Tom DeLay, like most Republican office holders, is a sexual pervert because he sees nothing wrong in sexual relations with children. He sees nothing wrong in slavery. He is a class A son of a bitch, and the people in his district in Texas will probably elect him again. It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew who brought you this horrific past 3 hours. I listened to that bombing again, and having listened to a bit of Bush today, it just I had such a good weekend, and then this. Anyway, thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program in Phoenix and answered your phone calls. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall, our webmaster. Moderators at MikeMalloy.com on the message board, thanks to them. And Catherine Bay, who's the executive producer. Have you gone to NovamRadio.com yet and signed up? Huh? All right. Back to your phone calls. Robert is calling from Miami. Robert, welcome to the program.
Yes, Mike. I just noticed today that CNN stated that an ex-vice president of Iraq, I don't know how many they had, an ex-vice president of Iraq was executed today because he had been one of the people involved in killing 140 Iraqis many years ago because Saddam Hussein had visited this town and some people tried to kill Saddam Hussein, and therefore they killed 140 people. Presumably most of them were not involved in trying to kill Saddam Hussein. They were just innocent people. And this man, vice president of Iraq, was executed today for this. And I was thinking that that George W. Bush made the statement one time. I think he let it slip. I don't think he planned to make it. That one of the reasons he went into Iraq was because Saddam Hussein tried to kill his father when his father was visiting Kuwait one time. There was a plot that was foiled that was linked to Saddam Hussein. So I thought to myself, you know, if you kill 140 people because some of the people there tried to kill a president, then that's considered a crime and you get executed for it. But if you kill 140,000 people, 180,000, however many people were killed during 2003.
Right. I see where you're going here. First of all, that's the same reason that Saddam Hussein was executed, for the very case that you're talking about. One of these other defendants with him that you mentioned, I had no idea he was executed today, but then I'm in America and I have the American media to rely on, so, you know, I don't know these things. But anyway,
They played it down.
Right. That's why Saddam was put on trial and executed. Yeah. They didn't try Saddam for one of those issues that George Bush said we went to war, and that was gassing his own people. And the reason they didn't is because it would have come out in trial testimony, one supposes, that it was the United States that provided him with that weaponry. Now, as far as what was the other thing you said? I'm sorry.
Bush one time let it slip. Kill my daddy.
Right, right. Well, that so-called plot against his father, I simply reject that ever really happened.
Well, I mean, it's possible. I have no way of judging whether that happened or not, but I know that the media uncritically reports it as if it were a fact.
Sure.
Regardless, in other words, he can punish a whole country
and
kill 100-something thousand for trying to kill his father, but if Saddam Hussein punishes 140 people in a town, that's wrong. You see, it's a strange scale of mass.
Well, it is. It is, and you're absolutely right. And Bush is a psychopath who will murder his own mother if he thought she was sitting on an oil well. And it was, by the way, just I'm sure you know this, it was Bill Clinton who ordered extra missiles into Iraq when the so-called plot against Pappy Bush was uncovered. Clinton was president, and he ordered all sorts of hell to rain down on Iraq because Clinton, Bill Clinton, was a few degrees less of a warmonger than George Herbert Walker Bush or George W. Bush. But the difference is, of course, that Clinton was personable and handsome and smiled nice. And
he wasn't an idiot.
And he wasn't an idiot. That's right. That's about it. Robert, thanks for checking in.
Have a good night.
All right, sir. I appreciate your call. Okay, Toby is calling from San Francisco. Hey, Toby, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how goes it?
Yeah, she's going fine.
Listen, it sounds like you need a little bit of cheering up, and I'm usually a tragedian, you know, it's ethnic, and so I want you to leave your program a little cheered up by knowing a few fun things.
All right, let's do it.
All right, so listen. Listen, Wojcik.
I'm listening.
First of all, at the Iraq demonstration yesterday?
Yeah.
The San Francisco Unified School District organized, you're gonna weep.
What?
The children.
They organized the children to demonstrate?
Yeah. They were wearing red t-shirts that said resist.
Wow, I like that. I like that. You're kidding me. You gotta be.
I'm not kidding you. They're in the middle of it. One of my friend's daughters was carrying a sign that said another mother against the war.
That's great. I love it. I love it. I love it.
You're always cheering up the world, and if I don't get my fix of Mike Malloy I got a good friend who's, you know, to end on this note, who they say no talking aloud, and they fight because they think that the show is run by someone named Molly Malloy. And so the two children say, Molly's, no talking aloud. Daddy and Mommy are watching Molly. Have to listen to Molly.
Oh, my God.
So just remember that, I'm like the eternal tragedian, you know?
Tragedian?
Yeah, I'm a card-carrying tragedian.
What's a tragedian? Tragedian.
Yeah, but you sounded tonight so tragic and so depressed.
Well, I can't stand it. I mean, this is the anniversary of murdering how many people? You know, that shocking.
I thought you'd like to know that I actually had a little bit of hope. And in between there, I'm listening to Valerie Plame about 17 times.
Yeah.
So I can manage to stay sane.
Toby, I got to go. But let me tell you something. As long as you're around to call in once in a while, I'm okay. Okay?
Okay, boy chick.
Thanks, Toby. Take care. Bye. All right. You got to love Toby. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Thanks for participating tonight, however you did that. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.